Okay, so today we'll be continuing to talk about the Mangala Sutta, which we stopped some time ago. Just to recap, the Mangala are those things that do away with evil. So we've gone through three stanzas. And now we come up to some that are not so directly related to the meditation practice. So we'll try to skip quickly through them, but in order to be complete, we'll go through them in order. And there are things that you can say on these blessings about meditation. These are blessings that generally relate to people who live in the house, people who live ordinary lives and have jobs and make money and employ people or are employed by other people and so on. But the general purpose of these blessings is to create peace and harmony just the same. And for people who are looking to make their way closer to a meditative state of life, who find themselves surrounded by obstacles or surrounded by worldly activities. These are very important ways to create peace and harmony and a meditative state or a meditative way of life that will bring anyone closer to the Buddha's teaching. If someone's goal is to ordain, then it will bring them closer to that goal because of the peace and the harmony that it brings. If someone's goal is to live a meditative life as a layperson, then these are the sorts of things that will allow. Besides the things that we've already talked about, here are more things that are useful for all of us. As monastics, they aren't even direct. Some of them aren't even directly useful. But they are those things that we have to keep in mind, and the general principles that we have to keep in mind in terms of creating peace and harmony. So the next ones are Mata Pitu Upatthanang Puttatharasa Sangaho Anakula Chakamanta Ita Mangala Mutamang. So caring for one's parents, caring for one's mother, caring for one's father, having good relations with one's relative, having a good relationship with one's spouse and children, and doing work that is uncomplicated or that is not crooked, having straight affairs that are not crooked or not complicated. So this is the next stanza, and it goes with the next one, so we might as well add them all in here. The next one is Dānañca dhammacārya accha ñātakānañca saṅghaho anāvacchāni kammāni vita mangalam uttamam. Dāna means charity. Dhammacārya, the practice of the Dhamma. Ñātakānañca saṅghaho, having good relationships with all of one's relatives. And anavajani kamani, performing deeds that are not blameworthy, that are free from blame. So what we'll see here is now a progression. And the Buddha begins in these stanzas by talking about those things that will be useful specifically in the lay life, But we can see towards the end it starts, or in the second stanza it starts to get a little bit more involved with the meditation. So we'll go through all of these today. They're all quite similar, actually. Matapitu upatthanang. This is something, looking after your parents is something that meditators will quite often overlook, forget about, or even disdain. I've even had arguments with people who have told me that, have explained their view that, their parents only gave birth to them out of desire, out of lust for each other, and they only cared for us in their womb because they wanted to, and it was all because of their desire to do so, and therefore we don't owe them anything. We never asked them to give birth to us, and even when we were growing up, we didn't ask them to take care of us. Of course, some people have the misfortune to have bad parents who didn't look after their children, who didn't perform the duties towards their children, didn't take care of them, and maybe even abused them. And so these people will argue or have at least either argue directly or at the very least have a difficult time appreciating this teaching or figuring out how they themselves, because of their history, can put into practice this teaching. So with all of these, we have to understand the situation that we find ourselves in. Scientifically speaking, it's correct to say that, or biologically speaking, that beings or human beings procreate based on desire, on instincts in the mind, and there's nothing really special about the relationship between a parent and a child. You know, if you break down the chemical composition of the parents and the child, and all beings, it's only the genes that get passed on by our parents. There's no part of our existence from a materialist point of view that gives us some responsibility towards our parents. This is from a materialist point of view, but from an experiential point of view, we have to account for our birth, our conception in the womb of our parents, which, from a point of view of experience, is not at all an obvious outcome of the deeds in this life. It's not obvious to us how, our goals and our dreams, we're not preparing ourselves, not intentionally, to be born in a human womb. Very difficult to understand how it is that we come to be born in a womb again at all. And the answer to this question is a very important part of why we have such an important duty towards our, or why we have a very such a profound relationship to our parents. Even before arguing this, what we should point out is that it's clearly the case for a person who comes to practice meditation. This is why this one actually does have some relationship to meditation practice, is that anyone who comes to practice meditation who does have a bad relationship towards their parents will be struck by the feelings of guilt and shame and even anger or sadness towards their parents if they've had a bad relationship. Anyone who's had a very good relationship with their parents, or who has had very loving and kind parents, will come to feel great love and appreciation for their parents, first and foremost. And it will really, for a new meditator, it will be quite a surprise that this should be the case, because they didn't come with the intention of cultivating love towards their parents directly, or for dealing with the issues involved with their parents directly, perhaps, but they will be shocked by how deep this relationship really goes. So it doesn't have to be argued that this relationship is an important one. It just has to be understood why it's an important one. From the point of view of a meditator, it is important to argue it with people who have never practiced meditation, but perhaps the easiest way to argue it is to point to people who have meditated and explain that, listen, when you do take the time to look at your own mind, you're going to realize how important, what a profound effect this relationship has on your mind. But just briefly to explain the theory behind why this occurs, has to do with the theory or the fact of us being born as a human being. To be born as a human being, you can't just arise in a lotus flower. Apparently in the Buddha's time there were cases of people who were just arose spontaneously in a lotus flower. These are stories or legends, whether they're true or not, I don't know. But what we do see, 99 out of 100 times, or 99 million out of 100 million times, or more, is human beings being born in a womb. And as I said, from an experiential point of view, this doesn't really make a lot of sense. Why should we be born into the womb of another from the point of view of experience? So the point of this is our minds and our lives are very much geared towards this reproductive cycle. This is why shortly after we're born, maybe 5 or 10 years, we begin to have interest in the opposite gender in general, or in an ordinary, or for the most part. Of course, homosexuality and so on is a part of the human state, but for the majority of humanity, there is this heterosexual reproductive desire. Even for people who are not attracted to the opposite gender, there will often arise a desire to have children. The male species, or the male gender, will often have desires to protect others, and the female will often have desires to develop stability or a nest or a home or so on. So in this way, we behave a lot like animals, and the materialist scientist will explain this in terms of genes and so on. We explain it in terms of habits that are accumulated from life to life. So our experience cultivates habit. From an experiential point of view, looking at the human state, you have to say this is quite a intensely contrived state. It's not at all obvious. You wouldn't think, well, if you have experience, if you start with just basic raw experience, that somehow you're going to get beings being born inside of each other's bodies. It's quite a contrived state. And so our very existence as in this state relies and depends on two people. It depends on our parents. And this is where our mind is at. If we deny, if we have parents and they've taken care of us and so on, and we deny that, we reject that. We're basically rejecting the very foundation of our very being. This brain, this body. This is the implication of what it means to inherit them from your parents, is that we have a very strong connection to these people. So, this is just some ideas of where this comes from, that really our parents are very much a part of who we are. And we chose, really, to be born in their womb. We came to this through a cultivation of habits and relationships in past lives. When you reject this, you reject harmony and stability. So what I would like to explain for many of these is how whether or not you understand that it's truly wholesome or unwholesome to do either way, to ignore to leave behind your parents or to take care of them. When you live in the world, if you're going to have children of your own, if you want to live in the world and have a stable life, you have to play by the rules. If we become anarchist and reject societal norms of some sort, or the basic norms of being, what it means to be a human being, then all that we'll find is chaos and confusion. And many problems will arise. So some sort of system of stability has to be appreciated, has to be honored. And the care that we take for our parents is a very important part of this. It's something that brings stability to the world. When people stop taking care of their parents, then of course the whole system breaks down. The parents will begin to neglect their children, or neglect their children's education, will not have any interest in taking care of their children, and the cycle breaks down. And of course it goes either both ways. Our future, when we have children, they will not think to take care of us, having seen the example that we've set for them, and so on. And society becomes quite upset. Of course, then we stop respecting elders in general, and we stop respecting experience. Nowadays, people will often think it's intelligence that is more important, and will laugh at our parents and their old ways, and so on. And it's only when we get old ourselves that we realize how important wisdom and experience really are. So care for your parents is, not only is it a very wholesome thing to do, to take care of them, to be grateful, but it's also something that leads to stability and harmony in the world. On top of that, there is something to be said about gratitude. This is the argument I've had before, is people don't understand this word gratitude. They don't understand why they should be grateful towards others. Gratitude is, and in this sense, you have to just understand what gratitude is like. Gratitude and ingratitude. Ingratitude is a shriveling mind state. It's a mind state full of anger and aversion and discord. It's a selfish mind state, because you have this logical one-to-one relationship where someone has done something for you and you have the opportunity to do something for them. When you don't do that, you create friction, and you create tension, and you create suffering in your mind. Now, this is something that you have to see, but meditators become more and more grateful as they practice. And so if we have gained whatever benefit we have gained from other people, we tend to be very keen to pay it back, even if the other people are are in general mean and evil people. Even in that case, we think more and more about what the good that they may have done for us, and less about the bad things that they've done. So if your parents have done bad things for you, the meditator will still find themselves wishing and having great love towards their parents for whatever good that they did do for them. This is how the meditator's mind starts to incline. It inclines away from revengeful and reactionary mind states, and it inclines towards grateful and loving mind states. So this is actually quite important for meditators, and it's important for people thinking to come to practice meditation, who should realize that starting with their parents, they should clear up all their relationships. They should create a stable life where they are, at least in terms of settling all their affairs, with all of their relationships. So if you have a problem with your parents, don't run away to come meditate. It won't work. Many meditators run away for that reason. Settle your affairs first and then come and meditate, so that it won't bother you when you're practicing meditation. Now, there is one sort of exception. I mean, monks are not expected to have direct contact with their parents. We're not expected to take care of them when they're old or so on. We're not expected to have much relationship with anyone at all. A monk can go off in the forest and leave the world behind. But even as monastics, we shouldn't take this too literally and think that if our parents are in need, we should avoid contact with such worldly people, even if our parents are worldly sorts of people. The Buddha was quite clear on this, and it's a good example of how, rather than seeing relationships as an obstacle to our practice, seeing them as our practice. Monks are allowed to take care of their parents. There was a monk who was praised by the Buddha for taking care of his parents. So, anyway, this is the first one. Taking care of your parents, of course, what needs to be said, the core of this blessing, this is just explaining why it's important, but the core of the blessing, what does it mean to take care of your parents? Doesn't necessarily mean that you have to give them medicine and you have to bathe them and clothe them or however when they get older or at any time. The Buddha said that in this way you can never pay back your parents. If your parents have, you know, even to the extent that your parents have given birth to you, the extent that they carried, your mother carried you in her womb for 9 months and your father was protecting her during that time and the love that they gave and the years and years that they put into raising you. As the Buddha said, it's very difficult to pay back such parents. Of course, if your father ran away after your mother got pregnant and your mother had no interest in you and abandoned you when you were born and so on, it's a little more difficult to see, even though we understand this to be karmic and it still points to the important, the strength of the relationship. The Buddha said the only way to clear this up is with the Dhamma. Even if your parents are mean and evil people, you know, if you think that your parents have done nothing for you or so little or have done so much bad to you that the good that they've done is totally outweighed. Even still, the teaching applies to administer to them with the Dhamma. If you still have a relationship with your parents or have an abusive relationship with anyone, a bad relationship, if you have a good relationship, if your parents have done great things and you feel somehow you want to pay them back, somehow you want to show your gratitude or you have the chance, the gratitude that we should show is in the Dhamma, that we should practice and we should teach and we should set an example and we should encourage them in the practice. We should be a support for them to find peace, happiness, and freedom from suffering. And not just in a material sense. Of course, this goes with anyone. Happiness in a material sense can easily be bought, can easily be found in the world, at least for some time. But happiness in a spiritual sense takes much more. It takes wisdom, it takes mindfulness, it takes diligence, it takes patience, it takes contentment, it takes many qualities that can only be gained through the practice of meditation. So the best thing you can do for anyone, especially your parents, is to encourage them in the practice of meditation or help support them in the practice. Okay, so this is the first one. Then we have in terms of, we'll just lump them all together because here we have in terms of one's spouse and children and relatives. And the commentary even goes further and says this is even in terms of our employees and our employers and really everyone that we have relationships with. It could be our fellow employees, it could be fellow students if we're studying, it could be fellow monastics in the world. This harmony in the community. And on the one hand, many of these, as I said, are not directly related to meditation, but if you look at it another way, these are really an indication of the mental development of the individuals. If someone doesn't have good relationships with other people, then you might want to assume that that person has not a very good meditation practice. If someone is constantly causing friction and strife in their family, arguing and bickering and backbiting and so on, and jealous and stingy and so on, with their relatives, with their, you know, husbands who fight with wives and parents who fight with children and employers who scold, treat their employees poorly, employees who cheat their employers, friends who backbite and gossip and so on. All of this is because of a lack of mental development. And so the important point I want to make is that we can't separate our meditation practice from our life. You know, a beginner meditator will often want to discard the whole world and give up all of their relationships. So when a person comes to bother them in their meditation, they might even yell at them or scold them. "I'm trying to meditate, why are you bothering me?" And this can go on for some time until they finally realize that relationships, as I said, should not be seen as an obstacle to the practice. They should be seen as the practice. When someone comes to you, the Buddha was clear about this. He said, when people come to me, I think, what can I do to teach them that will make them go away the quickest? And so when we hear this, we think, well, just tell them to go away, no? But it actually doesn't work that way. We've all tried that. As meditators, we've all tried to push people away. And we think, well, that's the way. Get rid of them. Tell them, look, if you don't like meditating, I don't want to have anything to do with you. But relationships have to be solved. There are not. There is the fact that there is a relationship with parents or relatives or anyone is because of some past karma that we have with them. So while it might be possible for us to go off in the forest and send loving kindness and never be bothered by anyone, if it happens that in the course of our quest to find such peace, we are bothered by other people, then we have to treat them with dignity and respect and give them the time and the support that they need. Otherwise, they'll never leave us. I've even tried this with evil people. There was one monk who was always causing problems, and I tried to just shut him off, and it just fueled the fire. And the more, it's like in India when you go to Bodh Gaya or you go to these Buddhist places and the beggars come, and the worst thing you can do besides giving them something is to say no. If you give something, you get 1,000 of them swarming you, and then you're in real trouble. But if you say no, 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 then they continue to pester you. This is the way of people. It's only by being patient and kind. So in India, the example of India is a good one, I think, because there's such greed in even these little kids who are actually not, they're not without. They're going to school and they have a little bit of money, I think. But they found how easy it is to get money from dumb tourists. No? So they come up and they ask you for money. And many people just say, no, 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 and they never stop, because for them it's a game. Or else it's serious and they really do need the money. But what I found was that when you just give them a big hug and say, what's your name? Learn a little bit of their language even. And suddenly they're a totally different person. And they say what their name is and you ask them what they're studying in school and so on. And then they go away. You untied the knot and there was never a problem in the first place. It's kind of like they talk about Aikido or Jiu-Jitsu or these kind of ways of redirecting energy. Anyway, relationships are an important part of our practice. And we all have them even as monastics. At the very least, we have a relationship with our teachers or with our students. And these relationships are very important and should be treated as